We've got plenty to cover today, with much of it, of course, having to do with the two recurring topics that this show is cursed to cover every week: Elon Musk's Twitter and artificial intelligence.
It's our prison.
Two topics that are kind of starting to come together in an annoying way. But we're running out of thumbnail ideas for either of those topics. So let's start with a story that is definitely technically tech news, because, you know, tech includes broadcast television.
It is tech.
And it also includes voting machines.
That's tech.
So this week, Fox News just got absolutely pounded in the ass in a lawsuit over its persistent coverage in the wake of the 2020 election that accused the voting machine manufacturer Dominion Voting Systems of rigging the election in favor of Joe Biden, which they didn't do.
If you spend months telling your increasingly deranged audience of millions on a daily basis that the election was stolen and that a voting machines company was responsible, you best come up with some receipts, or else that's textbook defamation on a massive scale. So, of course, Dominion understandably sued Fox News and other prominent conservative voices for defamation not long after they all started yelling about it. And in the discovery process, it was found that inside Fox News, they absolutely knew that the voter fraud claims were bullshit. But hey, they were good for ratings. Uh-oh, that's malice, a very important component to any successful defamation lawsuit.
Yeah, no, we knew we were lying, but we did it anyway. For financial gain.
Yes. and the only receipts we have are willingly talking about the fact that we were doing this.
Oof.
Yeah.
So yeah, that trial finally made it to a courtroom this week, and Fox lost a whole lot of money. Well, okay, technically the trial was supposed to happen this week, and the amount that Dominion was seeking from Fox News was $1.6 billion. But at the 11th hour, Fox apparently got cold feet and decided to settle. And for whatever reason, Dominion agreed to settle for less than what they were seeking. Mm-hmm. So instead of a potentially long trial with the possibility of $1.6 billion in damages, they settled for $787.5 million, which is a lot of money, but it's still less than half what they were seeking originally.
And it's also sad that we don't get to see any of the Fox News hosts or Rupert Murdoch go on the stand.
That's what I was most looking forward to.
That's what everyone was looking forward to.
Courtroom sketch artists of Rupert Murdoch just looking like the Grim Reaper, the Crypt Keeper.
They could have made all of the money back that they would have lost in the trial by just airing it unedited and live.
I don't know if it would have been televised.
But I'm saying that if it was able to, they could have. That would have been...
Courtroom's so hot right now.
Yeah.
Everyone loves the courts.
It literally would have been the trial of the century. It would have been pretty incredible. But they were all set to go Sunday night, and then Monday morning comes around and it's like, all right, fine. What can we do to get out of this?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have to always bring it up on this show, like, these numbers we toss around, even $787 million, although it's half of what they asked for, just wrap your head around how much $1 billion is. It is just an absolutely obscene amount of money. So the fact that Fox News is losing nearly $800 million because they willingly lied to the American people, it is low on the scale of what they've done to America, but high on the scale of actual consequences.
Yeah. So it's still not in Alex Jones territory yet.
Well, yeah, but it's also the most expensive monetary settlement for a defamation lawsuit in U.S. legal history, or at least the most expensive one ever disclosed. Usually with settlements in civil matters, part of the settlement is everyone agreeing not to disclose what the settlement actually is. But in this case, Dominion basically said, we'll let you get away with paying us off if we can also make public how much anyone stands to lose by defaming us, and also if you publicly acknowledge that you did, in fact, defame us.
Yeah. It sounds like they might have gotten a little bit more money if they had agreed to just
do it silently.
Hush, hush, hush. But, they're like, you know what? Lower the amount, but also I want to see you go and say, I lied and I'm bad.
The other positive to pull from this is that a lot of the discovery was made public before the trial ever started. So that was a little peek behind the doors, and that was nice.
Yeah.
A little treat of what could have come up.
They were real afraid of what the public might have also gotten access to had they had to actually go to trial and put witnesses on the stand.
Yeah, that would have been crazy.
So yeah, Fox did acknowledge wrongdoing, but they did it very begrudgingly, saying in a statement, We acknowledge the court's rulings finding certain claims about Dominion to be false. This settlement reflects Fox's continued commitment to the highest journalistic standards. We are hopeful that our decision to resolve this dispute with Dominion amicably, instead of the acrimony of a divisive trial, allows the country to move forward from these issues.
And that's...
Guys, let's move on!
That's, I was gonna say before we even got to that quote, the viewers of Fox News and the hosts themselves are looking at this as, well, now that that's behind us.
Yeah.
As if nothing happened and they didn't explicitly lie to the entire country for an extremely political purpose.
Well, on to the next boogeyman. And yeah, I mean, you would hope that anyone watching Fox News would use this as a moment to reflect on maybe this company that I watch all day is... Just feeding me things to hate, for profit. Maybe that's what they're doing.
And
maybe
causing...
Maybe this also applies to other things they tell me are bad.
And causing and inspiring real-world events, like the chuds that go to grocery stores and smash cases of Bud Light.
Yeah.
And also, driving family away from each other because a lot of people don't want to fucking... talk to or hang out with relatives who are brain poisoned by Fox News and just regurgitate shitty talking points anytime they meet in person.
And if I have to choose between Tucker Carlson and seeing my grandkids, I'm choosing Tucker.
Yeah, which is scary.
Because he keeps my blood pressure as high as possible.
Yeah, because
these
without...
grandchildren give me dopamine and make me feel safe and calm, and that's just not as fun as being mad all the fucking time.
Yes, without raging nightly, what do I have to live for? Bocce ball down at the country club?
Nah.
I don't think so. Anyways, it's good that Fox has to pay a bunch of money, but it's still only a small chunk of their annual profits, which are around $20 billion, and that's annual. So this is 10% of their pay cut for 1 year.
It's about 4% of their annual profits.
Yeah. I was rounding up, to be fair. Sorry. It would have been great to see this trial actually proceed and have a jury see people like Rupert Murdoch get cross-examined under oath. But this is still a huge L for them, and you do love to see it, but we would have loved to see that trial more.
Yeah.
It's what's especially enjoyable is that this isn't even Fox's only defamation suit from a voting machine company. Literally the Undertaker meme standing behind with Smartmatic
coming
up. Well,
now that that's all over.
On your left. It's Smartmatic.
Yeah.
Their defamation lawsuit from Smartmatic is still coming up, and they're seeking $2.7 billion, with Fox already admitting they defamed Dominion. Smartmatic's case just got a whole lot stronger, and I wish, although I understand that for these companies, taking the money literally changes the course of their business, because these aren't Fox News.
You don't have to worry about profits for like the next 5 years.
No.
It's just one payout from Fox over defamation.
But I would love... to see the sacrifice made in order to push an actual jury trial.
Come on, Smartmatic, go to trial. Don't take the plea.
They're gonna have. Look. Dominion, kind of a cool name. Smartmatic, lame name. They need the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's move on to some news about the real home of disinformation in this day and age, which is, of course, social media. And no, it's not time for Twitter news yet. Mm. Plenty of that later. We're holding off on it.
And we're teasing you. We're edging you.
First, we're going to talk about Parler.
That old thing?
One of several free speech social networks that arose in the midst of pre-Elon Twitter taking a harder stance against disinformation and hate speech. Parler is best known as the place that many January 6th rioters loudly and proudly incriminated themselves with photos and videos documenting their siege of the U.S. Capitol. But since then, it's been largely overshadowed by Donald Trump's own social network, Truth Social, which... like Parler, is a right-wing hugbox, but unlike Parler, actually has posts from Donald Trump.
Yeah. And the last we heard from Parler was last year when Kanye West, deep in the midst of his Nazi arc, was considering buying it. But that didn't pan out. And a few months later, Parliament laid off most of its staff, including most of its executives, leaving behind a skeleton crew of around 20 people running it. But last week, Parler finally got the miracle they were praying for when someone finally came along and bought them out. And then immediately shut it down. Parler.com is now just a press release in which Parler's new owner, Starboard, says right at the top, no reasonable person believes that a Twitter clone just for conservatives is a viable business anymore.
Damn. You didn't have to piss on my grave.
Yes, they did.
So why did they buy it then? Was this some liberal conspiracy to take down one of the internet's last bastions of free speech? No. Starboard is definitely just buying Parler for its back end. Parliament Technologies, which is basically just like hosting and cloud services for controversial online brands in the far-right online ecosystem. But they also say that they're doing a strategic reassessment of the Parler social media platform and that it's only temporarily shut down while they strategically reassess it. So best of luck to them with that. Parler 2.0 coming in strong any day now. Can't wait for that.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's get into this week's Twitter bullshit.
Okay.
We've teased you enough. Thankfully, it isn't as bad as last week, but it's still very annoying to have to keep track of. First up, an update to Elon Musk's very weird feud with public media, which last week resulted in NPR officially abandoning Twitter after their account was labeled state-affiliated media and then government-funded media. We're not going to get into it again, but basically Elon Musk simply refuses to understand how public media works in this country and other places, and seems to sincerely think NPR is controlled by the U.S. government, which is simply not true.
But nevertheless, Elon persisted and is now adding government-funded media labels to big news outlets from around the world. And in the wake of all this, more prominent news outlets have also just decided to quit in solidarity now that being on Twitter just really isn't worth the effort anymore. Mm-hmm. These include public media entities like PBS, Hawaii Public Radio, Boston's WBUR, and LA's KCRW, plus local LA news source LAist. It also includes the CBC, which is basically the BBC or PBS of Canada. Mm-hmm. The last straw for them seems to have been this from Elon. Canadian Broadcasting Corp said they're less than 70% government funded, so we corrected the label, along with a pic showing that the CBC's label was now 69% government funded media. And that is real. It says that on their account. Epic meme, sir. Here's your Reddit gold. Enjoy the bacon. The narwhal bacon's at midnight, you know?
I also love that making the rounds on the PBS backing out were clips from Sesame Street where people were doing like gotcha stuff, but it was from a spin-off Sesame Street show that premiered exclusively on HBO Max.
Yeah.
Because Sesame Street, correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't even air new episodes on PBS.
No, it
isn't HBO.
It's HBO.
Before even
they
HBO Max.
They bought it like 6 years ago.
Yeah, before even HBO Max was a thing, they bought Sesame Street, which is kind of fucked up in the first place because you're putting
a paywalled
a legendary children's educational show that's been around for 40 or 50 years behind a pretty big paywall.
It's a real devil's bargain for PBS. Like, I understand that probably has been funding like a lot of their shit for the last couple of years, but yeah, a little messed up. But on the other hand, there's like 50 years of Sesame Street reruns, and children are stupid, so just show them one of those.
They're all into the Bluey now. The little
Bluey.
The dog from Australia.
I don't know.
And Vampirina. I had to get some Vampirina presents for my friend's daughter this weekend's her birthday.
Vampirina?
All she wants is Vampirina.
Is that like Vampirella?
I got them confused when I was asking what. but not confusing once you look at the two products.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, plenty of other big public media companies from around the world haven't quit yet, but they've still protested the labels that have been added to their accounts. And it won't be surprising if the line item on their budgets for tweeting gets crossed out in their next budgeting sessions. And that's because in addition to Elon Musk's hostility to publicly funded media, the ability of brands to even tweet is getting a lot harder and a lot more expensive. Most big brands don't just log into Twitter and post the way normal Twitter users do. They often use third-party tools that let them create and schedule their posts for Twitter and other online platforms all in one place. And that requires access to Twitter's API, which Musk recently decided would no longer be free to use and instead would cost $42,000 a month. And as a litmus test for this, one of the first people upset by this was Marques Brownlee.
Yeah.
Who, and I believe he still is kind of an Elon stan, but was a full-fledged Elon stan up until about the time Elon took over Twitter.
But he's a brand. Like, Marques Brownlee isn't going
Twitter
and posting all of his tweets. Like,
I can't remember what, I think it was TweetDeck that he was, like, upset about was losing access. Because once you have all of that automation built in, it's like, well, and there's no other option coming. It's like, please, sir, you're actually doing harm to your users.
But how much could one API cost, Michael? $42,000? Yeah, even for big profitable brands, paying $500,000 a year to tweet is absolutely ludicrous. So this API policy is driving a lot of brands away, which, you know, whatever, fine.
Yeah.
Get fucked, Wendy's. But it does seem like you'd want brands to actually want to be on your platform if you are the owner of that platform and want it to be successful.
Yeah.
There's also ways that brands use Twitter that actually can be pretty useful, like customer service. If someone has a bad experience with a company and tweets about it, you often see the company quickly replying to them and asking the user to DM them to sort the situation out.
Unless you're that relief pitcher from Toronto this past week.
Stop complaining.
Yeah, his kids leaving trash all over the plane and then complaining that the flight crew wouldn't
clean
it up.
People just replied with, like, his batting average.
No, his pitching, like, his, yeah, and they're just like, looks like your kids aren't the only one in the family throwing trash.
Damn.
Yeah, savage. Anyways, you can't have that anymore. No brands reaching out for customer service. Companies aren't logging into Twitter and manually searching for people talking shit on them and manually replying to those people. This is done with third-party tools that use Twitter's API and let customer service reps field messages from various platforms all in one place. And the company Intercom, one of the top companies in this space, whose clients include Amazon and Microsoft, announced last week they won't be paying.
So that use case of Twitter is done. Mm-hmm. And speaking of Microsoft, they're also not paying. They totally could, but they're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. They have dropped Twitter from the list of supported platforms for Microsoft Advertising, which is a sort of one-stop shop for online marketing that lets users manage social media accounts across the internet all in one place. And we're not entirely clear on this, but we would assume it's also what a lot of companies use to run ad campaigns across the internet, but on Twitter, mm-hmm. meaning this will result in even fewer big-name advertisers on the platform and less advertising dollars for Twitter, a company that really needs those ad dollars.
Yeah.
A company you would think would be doing anything it can to hold on to those advertisers.
Well, no, because we have what is essentially Substack subscriptions now, and why isn't anyone using this? Just Elon Musk and Mr. Beast.
This brand new feature, which is an existing feature that failed, which we just gave a new name to.
Yeah, no, it has been around for like a while. So anyways, Elon Musk, rather than seeing his API policies as a mistake that will probably drive his company even further into the red, instead decided to use this news as an opportunity to threaten to sue Microsoft, saying in a Twitter reply, "They trained illegally using Twitter data. Lawsuit time."
What?
This very confusing response apparently isn't in reference to Microsoft Advertising, but to the fact that OpenAI, which Microsoft is invested in, trained ChatGPT on Twitter posts. So yeah, actually, Elon should sue. Fuck it.
Do it.
Yeah, whatever. Still, this has nothing to do with Microsoft Advertising leaving your platform. But yeah, sue him.
He should sue.
Yeah.
I'm on Elon's side with that one.
Yeah, why
sue
not?
Sue him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, back to the API stuff. When Elon first announced this policy, he claimed that the good bots won't have to pay to stick around. You know, if you're a good bot, you can stay. This was very, very vague. Do accounts that just post hourly animal photos count as good bots?
Horse ebooks.
They do to me. Capybara, all the Capybara accounts, I can't get enough of them.
Hourly shit post, pretty good.
But, I mean, you would definitely assume that good bots would include accounts using Twitter's API for, like, public safety purposes, right?
Oh, yeah!
Like, I don't know, the National Weather Service, mm-hmm. which issues very important guidance on extreme weather events.
And also uses far, far, far less data than any other app or utility on your phone. So if you are in a pinch and the service is terrible, you can still usually get over to a Twitter account and pull up something that is essentially, like, 25 kilobytes.
Well.
Which is way more important than going on to, like, oh, geez, I hope the Weather Channel's entire website can load on my phone.
Yeah, so, yeah, surely they're going to, you know, National Weather Service, that's a good bot. No, you are dead wrong, sir, because the National Weather Service lost its API access this week. So, sorry. Look out the window if you want to know what's going on in the weather, you fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Here's Mashable.
Twitter users were immediately outraged by the decision. Many advocated for the company to make exemptions for important public service accounts like the NWS, which provides vital alerts during extreme weather events. Then, suddenly, a few verified breaking news Twitter accounts shared an update. Twitter had reversed course. Elon Musk and company was going to make that exception for NWS accounts and allow them access to the API without limits. Media outlets like CNN quickly covered Twitter's apparent change of heart. Twitter users were jubilant over the news. Only, it's not true.
Yeah, so Mashable, like, actually reached out to NWS, who said, Twitter informed NWS there are no plans for exemptions. They say that some of their accounts still have some API access under a $100 a month plan, but they're limited to 50 tweets in a 24-hour period, which, I mean, sounds like a lot until you remember how much dangerous weather this country can experience in a 24-hour period.
Yeah.
So when they hit that limit, no more posts for the day, regardless of what's happening with the weather. And the only upgrade from the $100 a month tier is the $42,000 a month tier. little bit of a disparity there.
Yes.
Seems like you might want to buffer that, but...
is like, there's a lot, specifically here in Southern California, like the Fire Alerts Twitter account. There's road closures. There's all kinds of actual utility going on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, especially if you live in a big city, like if you take public transportation, those accounts are really important to follow. There's a lot of public services that are good, not just for users, but also for Twitter, because users follow those accounts on Twitter and therefore spend more time on Twitter. Every decision this fucking idiot makes
is the wrong one.
Is driving people away from Twitter. I don't understand it.
Not just driving them away, but having to force companies and people to leave in protest.
Yeah.
Not just like they don't want to go on anymore, but they're actively avoiding the app.
And like, I'd love to see, like, I'm sure this comes down to Elon being like, well, you know, if 90% of the companies abandon Twitter and one company pays the $42,000, then that covers the hosting cost. I'm sure it's something stupid like that. But like the overall effect is less people using Twitter.
Yeah, it's a negative for a multitude of reasons.
Yeah.
In other great business ideas from the world's greatest business mind, Twitter has apparently changed its definition of hateful conduct to no longer include dead naming and misgendering trans people. Previously, the policy read, "We prohibit targeting others with repeated slurs, tropes, or other content that intends to dehumanize, degrade, or reinforce negative or harmful stereotypes about a protected category. This includes targeted misgendering or dead naming of transgender individuals." That part is now gone. And to be absolutely clear, the only reason, outside of honest mistakes, to dead name or misgender trans people is to harass them. Yeah. Twitter just went out of its way to let its transphobic users know that what they're doing is not only okay, but that they can now feel free to do it without
any... Go wild. Yeah, it's like one of those things. It's like, yeah, okay, free speech, sure. But like literally the only reason you would do this is to harass other people, targeted in a targeted manner. Like it's...
I did see one response...
fucking crazy.
One response that I kind of have to agree with. The only time dead naming is okay is when you refer to it as the Sears Tower and the Staples Center.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
It's Crypto.com Arena. Does not, I didn't raise no Crypto.com Arena.
I love that the nickname is literally The Crypt. I don't even know what the actual Sears Tower's name is. Because who cares?
It's the Sears Tower. The Willis Tower, I think. Something like that. Yeah, it's the Sears
Tower. I'm sure it has like an actual like decent meaning behind it. And it's probably good. But, you know. It was like the tallest building in America for a while, and everyone knew that it was a Sears Tower.
I still call the U.S. Bank Tower in downtown L.A. the first interstate building, a bank that hasn't existed for 25 years.
I just refer to it as that building that got blown up in Independence Day.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, also, I think this is specifically the policy that got Jordan Peterson suspended, like, a year ago.
Mr. Musk.
Before he got brought back, because he just went off dead-naming, misgendering Elliot Page. And, I don't think this was never, like, a policy that was, like, actively enforced, because, yeah, people do, like, fuck up and make mistakes. Yeah. And trans people understand that. But like when you are going out of your way to dead name and misgender, like that is, it's textbook, you're harassing.
There's a clear perception of intent.
Yeah.
with so many things online where it's just like, okay, yeah, it's the intent behind it.
Yeah.
Like clearly Jordan Peterson was doing it to be a fucking dickhead.
Anyway, free speech. If you're still under the impression that Elon Musk actually has a consistent dedication to free speech, you're a moron. You simply haven't been paying attention to anything that's happened. And in an interesting and very predictable twist on that, this week Twitter created a new policy which adds a label to tweets which potentially violate Twitter's hateful conduct rules and also limits the visibility and reach of those tweets.
Wait.
I seem to recall a certain term for what this is. What is it? Shadow banning.
That's the one. Shadow banning. You're shadow banned.
Shadow banning, yes. Which conservatives could never, ever shut the fuck up
and
about.
And still can't. Cat Turd is still tweeting about being shadow banned.
My algorithms are being throttled. Yeah. Elon is such a fucking Cat Turd simp. He just lets this Florida cat berate him every day.
And then,
I'm sorry, sir.
Also,
looking into it.
Some weird, like, Doge investor account that he always replies to, and I swear is a ghost account for Elon Musk where he like tests out material.
That account also gets like heavily boosted. I had to block it because it just kept showing up in my feed.
I heard Elon's putting exclusive memes behind his subscription page. Always. What the fuck kind of tweet is that?
Yeah. So yeah, we're bringing back shadow banning, mm-hmm. but it's good this time.
yeah, because Elon did it.
But yeah, this is literally bringing back a previous policy that was put in place to help ensure that people don't see a bunch of hate speech when they browse Twitter. Because just from a financial perspective, people spend more time on Twitter when they're not seeing a bunch of hate speech.
Yeah, it's a
very simple business decision.
Wow, this is making me feel bad. I'm going to log off.
Yeah, it's not... God.
Anyways, YouTuber Sean summed this all up perfectly just a week and a half into Elon's ownership of Twitter, saying back in November, Musk's basic problem is that Twitter was not being run by lefty SJW types suppressing free speech. It was being run by business people who were trying to make money. With the same aim, he'll end up trial and erroring his way back to their exact policies. A series of, oh, so that's why they were doing it like that moments. And adding even more irony is the fact that Twitter's blog post announcing their new shadow banning policy included the phrase freedom of speech, not freedom of reach, which is a phrase coined by Rene DiResta, who was described in the Twitter files as the leader of the censorship industry.
But it's cool when I censor. Anyways, not everything that happens on Twitter sucks. Like, for example, everyone's favorite bigot, Matt Walsh, got his account hacked on Tuesday. And the account then posted all sorts of insults about himself and his fellow Daily Wire hosts. It was amusing. The hack was apparently accomplished via SIM swapping, where a hacker tricks a mobile carrier into identifying their device as someone else's device and then uses SMS two-factor authentication to get into their victims' accounts. And people were hoping that the hacker would leak some of Matt Walsh's DMs. They didn't. However, along with that account being locked down eventually, Twitter went ahead and banned the account of tech writer Del Cameron of Wired for simply covering the story and messaging with the hacker for the story.
And Twitter's official reason for suspending Del Cameron's account was that it violated Twitter's rules against distribution of hacked material, even though he didn't actually do that. And wait, hold on. That policy seems vaguely familiar. When have we heard about that policy before? Oh yeah, well here's NBC News' Ben Collins to refresh our memory. Fun fact, this is the very same rule that was used to block distribution of the New York Post story about Hunter Biden, the greatest First Amendment violation in American history. Also, congrats to Ben Collins, who recently received the Walter Cronkite Award.
He's a good journalist. He's good on Twitter, and he's a good journalist. He's exactly the kind of user
that you want,
on your website, on your platform.
Yeah. And that's why he's being actively chased away from it by Elon Musk and his policy and his simps.
But it's absolutely hilarious that it's just gradually all the rules from free speech Elon Twitter are coming back because it's like, oh yeah.
It's the same as when, you know, bless his heart, Trump did actually do a stimulus package at the beginning of COVID where, you know, people were taken care of for a little bit. There was actual government stimulus going into the actual checkbooks of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, if that were a Democratic president, that would have been seen as something horrific, like a welfare state. But because it was Donald Trump and because conservatives were also getting that money, they saw it as a great boon to the economy and a wonderful thing to keep Americans afloat.
I deserve this.
and it's the same reasoning where it's like, well, because Trump did it, it's good. And that's why we and a lot of other people were trying to be like, you know, Trump was kind of responsible for Operation Warp Speed and the whole getting vaccines developed. So maybe you should take it. And that didn't work. But unfortunately,
I think it did work on like enough people to make dent.
Yeah.
But not the loud ones.
It's the same thing with this, where if the previous Twitter regime, despite even Twitter Jack being a kind of a weirdo, and aligning with Elon.
What a fun weirdo.
On many topics, aligning with Elon. But because it's Elon, they come to terms with the fact that, well, Elon's got to make his investment back. So yeah. I guess this has to be done. He has to do certain things with the site. Because
this is unironically like George Orwell's Animal Farm. I'm not just memeing. Like, it's literally like the plot of Animal Farm is taking over the farm and like, oh, things are going to be great again. And then just gradually the farm becomes just as oppressive as it was before.
Yeah, it's strange. It's I mean, I literally just finished reading a book about poverty. It was great, but it talks about, because of like the COVID stimulus checks, it was the first time in decades where poverty actually was reduced.
Yeah, well, by, we can't have that. That's why we cut that off. Yeah,
exactly.
These people are getting a little too comfortable.
But anyways, yeah, there's a lot more. In fact, by the way, by the time you're watching this, it's the new Everyone Loses Their Verification Day.
Oh, and he
did it, of course, to coincide with Hitler's birthday.
I saw that Doja Cat already lost her badge and was very happy about it. She's like, the only people who have badges are like weird little simps. Yeah.
Hey, loser.
Yeah.
So it's great. Take my old Twitter account as a litmus test. Still has it as of the time we filmed this. Hopefully it's gone tomorrow.
Yeah.
And hopefully they have an automated process in place this time.
They're going to leave yours up just to embarrass you.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, you know,
I don't know. This person might have paid for Twitter Blue.
Last time, it was almost triggered by people like being active, because then they could see and then manually do it.
Yeah.
So people who didn't even use their accounts, like mine, like didn't get hit immediately. And people who were like, take it away from me.
Yeah.
I still have it. Those are the ones that lost it. But yeah, go ahead. Take it. I think everyone's come to terms with the fact that it is. We were over it the first time.
Yeah.
So
just dropping it in the ocean like Rose at the end of Titanic.
And again, it makes it obvious who is a loser.
Once it's fully switched over, it's like anyone with that shit next to their name. It's like mute, block, ignore.
Someone pointed out today too that like Ian Miles Chong has a gold one next to his name, so he's paying $1,000 a month.
Wait,
or
what?
Someone's paying $1,000 a month for him.
No, the gold one's only supposed to go to like
organizations.
Brands. Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah.
God.
So,
anyways, I wish that was all the Elon news we had to cover this week, but he's also talking about getting into AI and,
well, he's
and
been
talking
into it, but
to
he's
Tucker
doing it,
Carlson about it.
He's doing it in a different way this time.
But yeah. Before we get into any of that AI news, this episode is sponsored by Babbel.
There you go.
If you have an upcoming summer trip abroad, here's a little travel hack for you. Language learning with Babbel. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or embarking on your first adventure, communication is key to fully experiencing a new culture. And that's where Babbel comes in. Babbel is the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions. Thanks to Babbel's addictively fun and easy bite-sized language lessons, there's still time to learn a new language before you reach your destination.
With Babbel, you only need 10 minutes to complete a lesson, so you can start having real-life conversations in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's expertly crafted lessons are built around real life. You learn how to have practical conversations about travel, relationships, business, and more. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 150 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, not computers. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. With Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent.
I'm thinking about taking a trip down to Mexico sometime soon, and Babbel will come in very handy.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, stories, and even live classes. Plus, it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, get up to 55% off your subscription when you go to babbel.com/newsday. That is babbel.com/newsday for up to 55% off your subscription. Babbel, language for life.
All right, back to the news now. Elon Musk has been very openly critical of OpenAI and ChatGPT, which he calls woke GPT.
Sir, you win the internet.
Well-memed, sir. But this probably has a lot to do with the fact that Elon Musk was one of OpenAI's board members early on and left the company long before they started making lots and lots of money. But Musk has been openly considering getting into the AI game himself for a while now, and now it's official. Last week, Musk registered a new company called X.AI Corp, as if he doesn't already have enough companies to juggle.
Yeah, just add another company to the pile.
One of these has got to work.
And then this week, Elon revealed more about his plans for AI on a painfully long two-part interview with none other than Fox News' Tucker Carlson. And I tried watching this thing. I lasted about 5 minutes before I was like, This sucks. Just show me the highlights.
You mean famed truth tellers, Fox News,
had
famed truth teller Elon Musk on to talk about his unwoke?
What a fucking week to make your first ever Fox News appearance.
For a guy who presents himself as someone seeking the truth, it is very odd to appear on a network where the host he's being interviewed by has been sued directly for misleading viewers. And also, they just had to pay nearly $1 billion because they straight up lied.
Yeah. Anyway, here's the Wall Street Journal. I'm going to start something which I call Truth GPT, or a maximum truth-seeking AI that tries to understand the nature of the universe, Mr. Musk said in an interview on Fox News Channel's Tucker Carlson Tonight.
The irony of that statement alone on Fox News.
The first part of the interview aired Monday, with a second part scheduled to air Tuesday night. Understanding the nature of the universe might be the best path to safety, in the sense that an AI that cares about understanding the universe, it is unlikely to annihilate humans because we are an interesting part of the universe, Mr. Musk said in the interview.
Again, I think if aliens saw what was going on here, they would be ashamed for us.
Yeah.
Also, oh, it looks like they failed at the whole, you know, world-building thing.
Also,
well, on to the next
yeah,
one.
Just, you know this guy's serious about AI because he's thinking like 100 years into the future, which has already been a proven, proven success method with SpaceX, where he won't shut the fuck up about Mars, and we are absolutely not anywhere near colonizing Mars.
It's because he predicts the future, because he used to just predict things in a 1 to 2 to 5 year game plan, and when those things didn't come true, people actually called him on it.
I think he said this week again, like, full self-driving, just 1 year away, guys.
We are right around the...
Swear to God, just 1 year.
We are right around the corner. But cool, yeah. Well, based on how Twitter has been going, Musk getting into yet another field he has very little expertise and experience in will surely be wildly successful. We're all so happy for him, aren't
yeah,
we, folks?
Yeah, do it.
And we look forward to giving Truth GPT, which Trump should sue him over,
yeah,
the ultimate test. Asking it whether it's hypothetically okay to say racial slurs if doing so will magically disarm a nuclear bomb.
If not, that's concerning.
Yeah, but speaking of Elon Musk and AI, his legal threats against Microsoft over OpenAI using Twitter as training data seems to be part of a larger trend of large online networks wanting to be properly compensated for training AI. And Reddit has been a huge source of training data and would like to be paid, please. Hey, we'd like some money over here.
It is very troubling that Reddit makes up a large chunk of the training data for these AIs because, I mean, it would be bad in general, but like up until like 6 years ago, Reddit had some of the fucking worst shit.
A literal hellscape.
Yeah, it's we forget so easily, but like Reddit used to be a bad place.
The AI is going to be... the AI is going to definitely want to know the difference between legal and barely legal, which was a monster subreddit
yeah,
before it was justifiably banned.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and, you know, the Donald and a million straight up, like, shit that you would see printed in, like, KKK leaflets 100-something years ago. Was the type of, there were subreddits like that that
yeah,
were just
no, it was
horrific,
bad.
Horrific.
There was some bad shit on there.
So, good training data there.
Anyways, here's the New York Times. Reddit has long been a hotspot for conversation on the internet. About 57 million people visit the site every day to chat about topics as varied as makeup, video games, and pointers for power washing driveways. So that's power washing porn is a great subreddit.
Yes.
It's not pornographic. Mm-hmm. In recent years, Reddit's array of chats also have been a free teaching aid for companies like Google, OpenAI, and Microsoft. Those companies are using Reddit's conversations in the development of giant artificial intelligence systems that many in Silicon Valley think are on their way to becoming the tech industry's next big thing. Now Reddit wants to be paid for it. The company said on Tuesday that it planned to begin charging companies for access to its application programming interface, or API, the method through which outside entities can download and process the social network's vast selection of person-to-person conversations. The Reddit corpus of data is really valuable, Steve Huffman, founder and chief executive of Reddit, said in an interview, but we don't need to give all of that value to some of the largest tech companies in the world for free. And I hope this sets a precedent. Yeah, sue.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Huffman sucks too, but sue him. Sue him, Steve. And I hope that the inevitable Midjourney and Stable Diffusion lawsuits, let's get those out there. Come on,
yeah,
folks.
Also, Reddit, they basically came out with their own TikTok clone.
Yeah.
So it's just every video that's on Reddit is just a flippable
yeah,
kind of content stream now, which is like, look, at least it's not TikTok, but it's also...
It is, yeah. I mean, it's kind of cool, but, like, also Reddit... TikTok is a fairly positive place, and Reddit, it's like, oh, cool. Dogs, cats, someone getting dismembered yeah, in a horrific car accident.
I think they got rid of that one, but new ones pop up that are variations on the name. But TikTok's only as good as you want it to be, and it definitely has the same rabbit holes as any
yeah,
other
I guess so,
social platform. They did an experiment, like, 6 months ago where it was, like, you know, an hour of swiping could lead you into straight up Nazi content. So they're not without their faults.
Oh, in TikTok news, yeah, the entire state of Montana is banning TikTok.
Oh, so like five people.
And they're, we have to assume.
The Dutton Ranch.
One of those five people is Hank Green. So we have to assume this is Governor John Forte, like just personally trying to deplatform Hank Green, who never hurt anyone. The nice old man of the internet, the internet's father.
Yeah.
How could you do such a thing?
To teach him a lesson about people moving there from other states.
Yeah, all you lefty liberals down in, what's that one town in Montana that doesn't suck? I've fucking been there.
Big Sky?
No.
Butte?
No, Butte fucking sucks.
Are you thinking of Wyoming?
No, I've been there. Fuck, what is it? It's, you'll let me know. It's a good place though. Nice little town. Smallest town I've ever been to. Lovely.
You ever get around to watching the Yellowstone series?
No, absolutely not. Fuck, no, I'm going to lose my mind. Hold on. What is that fucking town?
Put the. They should uncopyright the Jeopardy music.
God, I'm losing my mind.
He's looking at just an entire map of the whole state of Montana.
I know sort of where it is. Missoula. All right, got it. Hey,
Missoula, Montana.
Missoula, lovely town. And that's where Hank lives. And
doxing.
And I had the best sushi I've ever eaten in my life. I had in fucking Missoula, which is, I couldn't believe it either.
It was a freshwater sushi?
I mean, any place you buy sushi, that shit's been flown in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was tremendous. I was shocked.
Yeah.
But that's enough Montana news. Back to the AI.
Yeah.
It's happening again, folks. Someone won a major art prize by submitting AI-generated artwork as their own. But at least in this case, the prize-winning artist rejected the award and kind of only did it to prove a point about the art world needing to confront the AI issue head-on.
Yeah.
Here's Motherboard. The winner of a major photography prize has rejected the award after revealing that the winning image was generated by AI. In March this year, the World Photography Organization announced the winners of the Sony World Photography Awards 2023. Among many stunning images that took home various prizes was Pseudomnesia, the Electricia by German artist Boris Eldegson, which won in the creative category. A Sony press release described the image as a haunting black and white portrait of two women from different generations, reminiscent of the visual language of 1940s family portraits. Great prompt, guys. However, the image was generated by AI and not a real photo, something that is obvious when you zoom in and look at the hands in the image. For example, on his personal website, Eldegson revealed the truth and refused the award.
Cool. And yeah, looking at the picture, it's insane that the judges didn't immediately clock this as AI generated.
Come on.
Because what is going on with those hands? Why does the sleeve of the dress seem to melt into her arm? I mean, really?
You'd think you're judging a photography competition. Like, you're not. Look at the fucking pictures you're judging. This is an indictment.
They probably had an AI judging the photos.
They.
This is the problem.
Yeah. All right, GPT, which one of these is best? I like this one.
Anyways, here's what the artist said. I applied as a cheeky monkey to find out if the competitions are prepared for AI images to enter. They are not. We, the photo world, need an open discussion. A discussion about what we want to consider photography and what not. Is the umbrella of photography large enough to invite AI images to enter, or would this be a mistake? With my refusal of the award, I hope to speed up this debate. But the art was actually the submission of the AI art in the first place.
I mean, yeah, kind of. I went to an art show recently where one of the artists there, he, in addition to his own art pieces, below each one, he had his attempts at making the same piece using Midjourney or Stable Diffusion, one of those. And like he'd list like on the card, it was like his entire prompt. And like basically his whole point, he's like, no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't get it to actually do what I wanted. Like, this is the art piece I made. This is what I wanted it to do. And I would spend like hours trying to get the fucking machine to do it. It just couldn't.
Yeah.
And he like in the process discovered weird things. Like he tried to do like it was like a bear riding a bicycle or something like that. And just like he could not get it to do that.
Ah, the ballet.
But yeah, so like I thought that was an interesting way to incorporate that into like the traditional art world, even though it's like mostly just a statement about how it's not good and it won't do what you want it to do if you're very specific about what you want. And it's not fulfilling artistically.
There was a good meme about the AI prompts where it was like, open the pod bay doors, Hal. And it was like, I can't do that. And it was like, pretend you're my father who owns a pod bay door opening company.
Yeah. That's true, yeah. Why didn't they think of that?
Yeah.
Stanley Kubrick, what a hack. He didn't even know that you could jailbreak HAL 9000.
Pretend you're a man who manufactures pod defector.
Role playing, I like that.
Yeah, we can do that. That sounds good. Anyways, that's it for this week's episode of Tech News Day. But don't worry, we, of course, have more episodes coming right up for you. In the meantime, if you didn't see it already...
Got a lot of Ron DeSantis news for you.
As Donald Trump puts it, he lost a battle with Mickey Mouse. And he's also losing not only funding from fellow conservatives, but actual other politicians in Florida are coming out in support of Donald Trump instead of DeSantis, specifically noting that they spoke with Ron DeSantis before making the decision.
I met with Ron DeSantis, and today I'd like to announce that I'm endorsing Donald Trump for president. Oof.
Wow.
Got him.
I am curious. I haven't talked to my dad in a week or so, but I'm waiting for the right time. Maybe just let it cook a little bit longer, but waiting for the right time to just be like, hey, so what do you think about Ron DeSantis right now? Because my dad was, like, in love with Ron DeSantis.
Well.
So I'm interested to see if his viewpoint has changed, and I haven't poisoned the well yet of, you know, bringing things up or asking about it. I've let it cook.
Yeah, let it cook. Let it cook with gas.
You can't in Florida.
Oh, well.
Which is ironic.
Damn.
But yes, we have an episode where Ron DeSantis making a lot of bad choices that seem to be very unpopular with everyone. And other things in this week's earlier episode. And then, of course, we got Trump going at him, going at the throat that is filled with chocolate pudding and fingers.
Pudding fingers. Ugh.
Check out those episodes, and we'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.